women, bringing you inspiring stories, politics, pop culture, and lifestyle hacks, all with an eye to making our communities and our country a better place to live. It's the Happy Women Podcast with your hosts, Jen Horn and Katie Gorka.
Thanks for joining us and welcome to the Happy Women Podcast. We're so excited to have you with us and to be back together again. I'm Jennifer Horn.
I'm Katie Gorka.
And we have lots to talk about today. We've got men and women at work, some interesting studies coming out. We've got MIT and DEI and all kinds of LOLs that we're going to have together today. But Katie, sadly, we start with more protests, this time at the Met Gala. Now, I have to give you full disclosure. I pay attention to the Met Gala every year because I love the fashion. Because the fashion's very out of control for the Met Gala. They do like pieces of art. In fact, this year, Demi Moore actually wore a dress made from wallpaper. There was another lady who wore a dress made from sand, which, let me tell you, shows just about everything in that sand dress. She had to be carried up the stairs because she couldn't even walk because this was like a sand sculpture she was wearing. But it's kind of fun to see all of the fashion and the fun that the Met Gala brings. This year's theme was the Garden of Time or some crazy weird stuff like that. But unfortunately, the Met Gala, I think, was overshadowed in many of our minds because, once again, we see these protesters, these pro-Hamas protesters, and I think really, at this point, we can call many of them rioters that tried to interrupt the Met Gala. They tried to push past police barricades. And no longer are we paying attention to the fashion. Instead, we're hearing these stories about the thousands of people who are marching around New York.
Well, I first sort of tuned into this because I saw a headline on The Guardian that said dozens of protesters, sort of disrupt the Met Gala. And so I wanted to see for myself, because I've learned well enough by now not to trust the mainstream media.
What they meant to say was dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens, yeah, and dozens and dozens and dozens of protesters, but they didn't have room in the paper.
There you go. So I looked for video clips, and I have to tell you, I was quite terrified. I've got family living in New York City. I myself lived in New York City for many years. I love New York City. But I was quite terrified to see the thousands of protesters pour out from the side street onto Fifth Avenue. And it was a really big, violent protest. And there was destruction. They defaced a World War I memorial in Central Park. They burned an American flag. And, you know, this is now off of the campuses and into our cities and into our communities. And I think that this has to be a major wake-up call for Americans. And I just would love to know what those liberal New Yorkers on Fifth Avenue were thinking when they saw hundreds of people pouring down their street in this massive protest.
And I'm curious to know if any of the celebrities who were at the Met Gala will actually comment on this, because you have a lot of these people, celebrities who are influencers and who use social media to almost prop up these platforms, I think. And some of them have stood with Israel. Others are standing for the pro-Hamas sentiment. It'll be interesting to see what we hear from them, because when elitists have their everyday life touched, it becomes a whole different story. I do think it's interesting about the media coverage of this because, you know, probably I think we could say arguably the two biggest stories of the past couple of weeks have been President Trump's so-called hush money trial in New York and then the college campus protests. And what I noticed is if you're watching Fox News, it's all about the college protests. And if you're watching CNN and MSNBC, it's all about President Trump and Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen every 5 seconds. And so what I think was most notable is what you pointed out about these protests disturbing the Met Gala. Normally, that would be a gigantic news story. And Fox News did have live coverage of it last night as these protesters were marching through New York. But other media outlets have really glossed over this, and they are not talking about it. And you're right, they're downplaying it. And you have to think, this goes about not about the news cycle or what's really at play here with the protesters or who's funding them, but this is about the media thinking that it looks bad for Democrats' chances in 2024, I would imagine. I think they're downplaying it because they know how terrible it looks to the average American.
So I think the real news story here is the fact that you did have these thousands of protesters pour onto Fifth Avenue. But when I went to search it on Wikipedia, when you search Met Gala, of course, all you get are stories about the dresses, right? Yeah. And you don't get the story about the protesters unless you specifically ask for that. But, you know, the bottom line is, in spite of the media's effort to downplay these protests, it's impacting a lot of families directly, in large part because of what's happening on the campuses. Yesterday, Columbia University canceled its graduation. Other schools are going to have to be canceling graduation. Students aren't feeling safe. Students are being threatened. This is going to impact a lot of families. And I would argue, because these are sort of the elite institutions where a lot of conservatives don't like to send their kids, I think this is going to disproportionately impact Democratic voters. Yeah. And I cannot imagine that they are happy about this.
I would agree with you. And I think that's really the story. And I'm really curious to know what the Democrat convention is going to look like in a place like Chicago that is led by woke elected officials. And that's going to be coming up. I mean, we're just a couple of months away from seeing what plays there. And I would imagine every other major event now through the summer, we're going to see these same kind of protests because, first of all, we allowed for them on college campuses. They've been emboldened now, I think, because we didn't just shut it down early on. And so we've got to deal with this. And I don't think it's helpful for Democrats, of course, if we're looking at this politically. But I really feel sorry for the kids who are on these college campuses who just want to graduate, who just want to go to class, because certainly this is the minority. It's not the majority of students that are getting wrapped up in this. But we've got graduations that are canceled. We've got faculty members that I shared with you. I won't read from the letter, but I had a friend of my family whose daughter teaches English at UCLA. I live in Los Angeles. And she was one of about 40 faculty members that signed a letter really going after UCLA for even clearing the encampments and painting the people who were there, preventing Jewish students and everyone else, by the way, for moving freely around that campus and saying that they were actually the victims. And even cited that they were forced to watch footage from October 7th in which they were seeing rapes and kids crying and all of that, somehow saying that they were being victimized by those videos. And it just shows you who is teaching our kids right now and where the indoctrination is coming from. And I think, by and large, I think you're going to see more and more people heed the warnings of people like Charlie Kirk and either choose not to send their kids to college, or I think you might see a growth in popularity for Southern universities, more conservative universities. I really think you're going to see a division. Democrats and Republicans, you're going to have conservative colleges, you're going to have liberal colleges. And I think we've just even now divided ourselves even more than we have been, because I don't think there's going to be an appetite for parents to say, you know what, I don't want to spend all this money and not get to go see my kid graduate from UCLA or USC or Columbia University.
But I'm also wondering if there's not going to be, you know, sort of a silver lining in this, akin to the silver lining that came from the COVID shutdowns, which is, so my son, our son was in college during that time. His school shut down for an exceptionally long time. It was a very, very difficult time for him to be stuck at home, isolated.
He was going to school in California, too, right?
Yeah. He was in California.
We do shutdowns here. We love shutdowns in California.
I know. You are the masters of the shutdown.
Exactly.
But it was really interesting because what he told us was, you know, I think it was a real eye opener for a lot of his friends, the majority of whom are liberal leaning, because they had never had their freedoms taken away. They never felt themselves controlled. And he told us one story in particular. So the school, okay, let's just name it. It was Stanford. Stanford actually at one point came up with this system where they created an app and kids wore wristbands of a particular color, and you were only allowed to go on a part of the campus color coded to your wristband, something like that. Created an app where kids could report other kids who violated these rules. As soon as it happened, friends of his who were left-leaning, friends of his, very proudly came up with an algorithm to bust the app. And they, because they couldn't stand the idea. So yes, yeah, so they came up with an algorithm that just started generating all these fake reports because they couldn't stand the fact that the university was asking them to report on each other. So I think, you know, there was something positive that came out of it. And I think we're going to see something similar here. Yeah. I think we're going to see, you know, yes, we've probably got a big number of kids that have been sucked in by this ridiculous ideology. But I think you're going to also have a solid group of kids who are looking at this in horror and saying, what is this? This is not what I believe in. And it's going to sort of push them into, I think, a more conservative understanding of the world.
You know, I look at things through the scope of living in California, and, you know, there's been a lot of disappointment. I always get very hopeful, and then I go, oh, gosh, these voters again in California. But I do think there is an awakening, and I do think people actually have to see it for themselves. I hope that it is a quicker awakening than what I've experienced in California, which is kind of slow. But I'll tell you, on the morning show that I host in Los Angeles, on The Morning Answer, we tracked down this guy who's now a social media phenomenon. He was nobody. I mean, he had a couple thousand followers. Now he's got like 50,000 followers on TikTok, on Instagram. His name is Daddy Milagro Jones. He's a young kid, UCLA student. And what was interesting about him is he came from nothing. He was in jail, had a two-year-old daughter, lived in a very poor area of Los Angeles, like Compton area. He struggled. And after he got out of jail, he made a vow to change his life. And he did it for his daughter. And he got enrolled in UCLA. And he's almost done. I think he graduates this year. He's got plans to go on. He's already been accepted to LSU. He's going to be he's in their doctorate program. So this guy's got a phenomenal story. He said, and he was on our program just a week ago, that he never thought about politics. And when he did vote, he would always vote for the leftist candidates. He would always vote for the Democrats. But when he saw what was happening on UCLA's campus and how students were held hostage, he started making videos of the people who were actually out there protesting. And those videos went viral. He is now out there talking about being a proud Zionist. He's out there saying he's going to vote for Donald Trump. He's out there talking about conservative principles. And it happened in a moment like this for him. He explained it as an epiphany. And so maybe it does take some of this craziness for people to see on their front porch, for them to go, we need to make some big changes and we need to do it quickly. And now the guy's like all over Fox News. He's like, he's now a viral sensation. It's happened in like a 2-week period because of the protest. So maybe you're right. Maybe it does happen overnight when something is taken away, your freedom is taken away and something clicks.
I think there's another piece of this that's worth talking about, which is what is the underpinning to all of this? And that mm-hmm. is the DEI infrastructure. You know, it's the fact that you've had these massive DEI bureaucracies built up at many of these campuses who are pushing that agenda, that oppressor and oppressed, that notion of the victimized. It's very important that that's been there. You know, one of the things we don't talk about enough is the fact that these DEI administrators serve as thought police. I mean, they're the ones that call professors out if they step on somebody's toes, and that are pushing a particular agenda and are making sure that people follow the DEI line. Mm-hmm. I found it very interesting to see there was just a story posted about MIT. MIT is the first private university that has just abandoned the practice of requiring DEI statements of new hires amongst professors.
That's huge, by the way.
Yeah, it is huge. And I think it's also, I also found it interesting to see Stanford. So Stanford's been in the news a bit lately for two reasons. One is Chris Rufo, who does such good work on this, had a piece in City Journal in recent days where he pointed out that Stanford has 177 DEI administrators. Just think about that.
Wow.
But I also saw the news that Stanford has a new president. So if you remember, their president lost his job. He's now in a cushy professorship. He's still there. But it turns out he had falsified data in some of his research. So he's no longer the president. They have just named a new president. And I have to say, he sounds like kind of a reasonable middle-of-the-road guy. I think he came out of the business school. And it's going to be really – I certainly – don't think he is out of the DEI mold as some of these heads of the East Coast Ivies are, for sure. So it's going to be really interesting to watch Stanford in the months and years ahead and see whether they don't have something of a course correction.
I hope so. I mean, I really think I can't say that that's the case going on at UCLA here locally. The chancellor there has been there for 17 years. He's retiring, actually, at the end of this semester. But certainly when you look at Columbia and you look at some of these East Coast schools that have been impacted, particularly with these encampments and the protesters and mishandling of everything, you look and you go, these are people who are just brought on the job. Oh, these are people who check a lot of those DEI boxes. And you got to go for what's right. I don't know how we ever got away from that. It's amazing to me how much of a priority we put on people's gender and their skin color now, because I don't feel like I'm that old. But growing up in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, the early 2000s, I was told that we're a melting pot and that you look at the individual, you look at their character, you don't look at their skin color, and everybody should be given the same opportunity to succeed. But you don't succeed because of your skin tone or your gender. And somehow that has shifted, and it has shifted so quickly. And it's unfortunate because we're not getting the best and the brightest. We're getting people who just check boxes. And I don't even think that's a positive message. It's telling people that you don't have to really work hard. You just have to be of a certain persuasion, or you have to look a certain way. And we don't really promote success just for the sake of success with this kind of DEI initiatives that are just rolling out everywhere, not just on campuses, but in corporations too.
So I think that this focus on these, you know, immutable characteristics, whether it's race or ethnicity or your gender, you know, when you focus on that and you don't focus on the whole person. I want to say, first of all, and, you know, yes, I look at the world through the lens of Marxism right now because of having just written the book, Next Gen Marxism. But it is
now wherever you get your books.
Yes, exactly. But it is very much a Marxist perspective. Marx reduced, you know, men and women to just being economic beings. And this is very much part of the contemporary movement. And when you do that, it has all kinds of negative consequences. As you said, you know, for one thing, I feel like the only lens we look through anymore is race. Like, we had started to go colorblind as a society, and now we're obsessed with it again. But I want to say another area where I think this is really kind of rearing its ugly head and showing its negative impact is with regard to men and women. Yeah. So I think there's been so much of an emphasis in recent decades on sort of, balancing out the roles of men and women in the workforce. And, you know, to be fair, actually, you know, because I've done research on this, and to be fair, this actually started under Reagan. Mm-hmm. And I think it started with the best of intentions. There was a speech that he made, I want to say in the late 80s, called Workforce of the Future. And the recognition was that the percentage of men in the workforce had kind of leveled out, but that African-Americans or minorities and women, those percentages would be increasing. So as a country, we needed to think about what we could do to make the workplace more accommodating to women, to minorities, whatever. But it's kind of gone way too far, right, because of the whole DEI thing. And so one of the impacts that we're seeing is that now women greatly outnumber men in our universities, and we are seeing them start to outnumber men in the workplace. And we're seeing a really significant problem with a sort of permanent unemployed class amongst men.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's very funny because I always kind of go back to this conversation. Might have actually been with your husband, might have been with Dr. G on his program. And it kind of struck me. I am absolutely, my age group is the beneficiary of this. My class, my age group, I guess, was really, there was an emphasis on creating smart women, on creating women leaders, on focusing the attention on uplifting women. And I think that was definitely under Reagan. It was the 80s. Again, it was the early 90s when you're in grade school, junior high, you go into high school, and the emphasis was on creating women and creating strong women. And I benefited from that. And I am so grateful. But what I think is so sad is that we put so much of an emphasis on that, that we really left behind men. And that I think there has been a shortage. And I think there are still incredible men, but I think there has been a shortage of strong men because men were unsure of what their place was in society. And so when we look at school shootings, when we look at all of these kind of, you know, the criminal element, you can kind of almost guess who's going to be holding that gun, right? It's always the white guy, younger guy who sits in his parents' basement. He's not an example of a strong man. And I feel like we have not done our part in society to say, hey, we can create strong women and we can encourage women to go to college and we can encourage women to further their careers. And that's fine if that's their choice. But we also can uplift men at the same time. But it seems that we sacrifice one for the other. So when we're focused on women, all of a sudden now we have a whole generation of men who haven't had that same care. And I think we see that come back to us, whether it's a school shooting or this study that I brought to you today that talks about men who are just not in the workforce. They're not engaged. And you've got women now who are out there outworking, getting the jobs, staying in their jobs more than even men.
Yeah. So I had an interesting time talking about this over breakfast this morning with our son, who is 25. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, looking at some of these numbers. You know, Mike Rowe very famously talked about the fact that there are around 7 million prime-aged men. That means between the ages of 25 and 54 who are sitting it out. They are like the permanent unemployed. And we were talking about the fact that male unemployment during the 2008 recession dropped. Male employment dropped from 88% to 80%. That's a big drop. And it still hasn't recovered. We still have not recovered to that pre level. But he brought an interesting angle to it. He's been, you know, working recently, you know, he's trying to get into med school and he's been working recently as a medical assistant.
He's such a slacker, this guy, you know?
Yeah, like... I know. But he said it was really insightful for him to be working in a hospital as a medical assistant where you had so many of the men were doctors, but the whole support staff were largely women. And he was trying to, you know, when he was getting ready to leave, he was encouraging them to hire another man in the job as a medical assistant. And he had all kinds of reasons for why it was helpful. But they kind of leaned away from it. And he said there's a really big problem because you have the STEM field, right, where there's been a big push to get women into STEM.
Yeah.
But there's not been a comparable push to get men onto the flip side, which is what he called HEAL. And I had not heard this before. I don't know if you've heard this.
No.
HEAL is health, education, administration, and literacy.
Okay.
So what this, yeah.
Teachers,
so what this means,
doctors, I would
exactly,
imagine.
No, yeah. More like teachers, nurses, medical mm-hmm. assistants, that kind of support staff. And you know, for example, he made a great point that the percentage of males who are in the teaching profession has really, really dropped, that you have almost entirely female teachers now. Mm-hmm. And he said it's just really problematic for boys, for example, in the classroom, where you have all these female teachers and, you know, the girls can be calmer. They're better at critical thinking at an earlier age because of the way their brains develop. Boys tend to be rowdy and rambunctious. It takes longer for the critical thinking to develop. So he said he felt like there's kind of a natural, you know, even at the younger ages, there's almost like a natural discrimination against boys. And it's really been compounded by the whole DEI craziness. And I think as a society, we're paying the price. And I think, sadly to say, I think our boys and young men are paying a terrible price for it.
You know, it's really interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. First of all, I'd never heard the term heel. I think that's interesting. But how much bias do we have built in? I'll say, what would you say? I mean, what do you think normally when you think of a male nurse or you think of an elementary school teacher who's a man? I mean, I think most of us, I don't know if we would outwardly say it, but we might go, oh, because it's so unusual, right? We don't see that so often. And I wonder if that prevents people from going into those fields or if they're really there, but maybe they're just not getting hired. I mean, there could be this little bit of reverse discrimination that's going on against men, particularly in those fields.
Well, that was exactly what he said. Yes. He said he told the head of HR, the head of, you know, whatever, the medical staff, he said, you know, he said to them, I really think you ought to hire a male for this position. And she said, well, I don't know. You know, we tend to hire women. And it's like, yes, why is there that?
If she had said we tend to hire men.
Men.
Would have been a lawsuit in about 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now I think there is a positive side to this. And, you know, because I feel that I have seen more men step up into a caretaking role, like, whether it's helping to take care of elderly parents or whether it's sure. taking care of the kids. And I do love that. I mean, I love seeing, you know, sort of traditional roles being shaken up. And I think, you know, it is such a blessing to get to take care of kids. I'm glad to see men getting to do more of that. But I do worry that there is this kind of darker thing that's going on where I feel as a society, we have really developed this almost, you know, anti-male thing. And it kind of goes back to what you and I were talking about, right? The man v. bear. You know, that thing that came up last week that's been big on social media. If you're a woman walking in the woods at night, would you rather encounter a man or a bear? And so many people said a man. And,
right.
you know, like, what is wrong with us?
They would rather see a bear than a man.
I'm sorry. Yes, exactly.
But I think this kind of goes back to the sadness that there is, I think, this bias against strong men in our culture. And I think we have to recognize that there is a role for strong men, that we need strong men, that we need to have that as part of our culture. And one doesn't have to be exclusive to the other. That's what I keep reminding people is I think there is a way of thinking that you can only have strong women or you can only have strong men. You can really have both of those things. And strength comes in different fields. You know, you can have a strong woman who is a homemaker and who helps out at home. You could have a strong man who does the same thing. But we need to make sure that we do that. Otherwise, our culture collapses. And I think we try so hard not to embrace traditional gender roles, but we really need them, I think, to survive. That's probably controversial. I'll get my woman card taken away from me in Los Angeles on the mean streets, but I believe we need some kind of semblance of that to make our culture work.
Okay, now, having said that, I also will say I love a man who can cook.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying one is exclusive to the other, by the way. Look, we all want the guy. You don't want the guy who's alpha all the time. But you want the guy who can be kind of alpha every once in a while when it comes to your safety, keeping everybody safe. But you still want the guy who can laugh and maybe cry at a sensitive movie every once in a while, you know, when you get the little itch in the eye. You want that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that's the thing to being a fully, like, human person, right? I mean, to be a fully developed human being, you have to have all those elements. But I don't think we do ourselves any favors when we just say that men are no longer wanted in certain professions or men are no longer needed in the boardroom because we have to check boxes to make sure there are enough women sitting in there. That's where I think we really start to fall apart.
Yeah. And I think it's fueling, as you said, you know, you talked about the problems that we're having with the mass shooters. But I think it's also doing a lot to fuel both the suicide epidemic, mm-hmm. but also
much worse for men than it is for women now.
Absolutely. And the addiction crisis. Yeah. And I can say I've seen, you know, I have connected with various workplaces where there is really a challenge to find people to hire, not because there aren't people applying for jobs, but because you can't find people that can pass the drug test. And so that's
sad
a problem.
State of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's on all of us to lift everybody in the society up.
Yes.
And I think that that's part of our job as conservatives. As we push back on DEI, I think it also means honoring all people, but looking at them as the whole person, not reducing people to their sex, their race, their ethnicity, but looking at the whole person and every person as created in the image of God.
I love that. And I'm just going to add, because you said that so eloquently, I'm just going to add one thing, and that is, let's support that each of us have a set of strengths and weaknesses, and they are not all the same. And we should embrace that they're not all the same, and that there are going to be people who do one job better than another, and there are people who do another job better than another. And I think that's okay. I think there's, you know, as much as people love to show their differences, they also love to pretend that everybody can do the same thing as well. And that's not always the case. We all have our unique and special gifts and talents. Now, can I tell you one funny story before we wrap up today? Because we are happy women, for crying out loud. This story just made me laugh because, you know, you've all heard of like the handbags, like the fake Louis Vuitton. That's like a Louis Button, you know, or you have the Coach bag where the O sort of looks like a G. You know, you've got like the knockoff bags. Have you heard of the knockoff panda? Apparently, there is a zoo in China that is getting a ton of heat right now because they were selling the fact that they had a panda exhibit. Well, May 1st, they opened. They have no pandas. So what did they do? They took Chow Chows, these little dogs, little furry dogs, and they dyed them with panda markings. Now, these are dogs that just have, like, the black spot around one eye. They look like little pandas, but it's still very clear they're a dog. And they tried to sell this to people who were coming into the zoo. They were showing these dogs off as pandas. And finally, someone got wise to it a few days ago and blew the whistle on the fact that they had imposter dogs in their panda cage. And, of course, the animal activists came out and they said, it's not right for you to dye the dogs. They said, no, it's all natural dyes. And if you've been to Beverly Hills, you've probably seen a pink poodle or two. It's not necessarily for me that they dyed the pandas. It's the people who probably looked at those so-called pandas and they were like, probably, oh, those things are cute. And they probably took pictures with them before they even realized they were dogs. I wonder what those people think today.
Either that or they're also too afraid to challenge it because they're afraid they'll be taken out to the country somewhere and shot or put in prison, right?
Good reminder. This is China, not New York. That's right. They're like, okay, those are the prettiest pandas I've ever seen. All right. Thank you for joining us. That's the Happy Women Podcast. I'm Jennifer Horn. You can follow me at Jennifer Horn Radio on Instagram or Facebook, Jennifer Horn on Truth or X. And you should definitely get Katie Gorka's book right now. It's Next Gen Marxism. Wherever you get your books, you can give her a follow. Search Catherine Gorka on Facebook or katiegorka.org. And guys, please share our podcast. Like it. Leave us a review. We love a 5-star review if you can. And share and tell your friends. We are so excited to be doing this and hope you enjoy it too. Thanks for joining us. It's the Happy Women Podcast.